Well, welcome to this workshop, Principals Helping Teachers Succeed. I probably should have you up here teaching this.
I'll learn.
A lot more experience than I have at this, but I'm curious, we talked about this in our discussion group last night, but how many of you are full-time teachers as well as principal? Okay, most of you. as principals, we're called to lead our school. That's what the role means. The principal, you're supposed to be the leader, the person who kind of is in charge of the school. And in my short experience as a principal, I found that involves an awful lot. Discipline, maintenance, janitorial duties, board meetings, for some of you maybe finances, counseling students and teachers and parents, and some of you teaching on top of all that. And it probably, at least for me, it involves a lot more than I knew it did when I agreed to do it. And maybe if I'd have known, I wouldn't have done it. But I'm glad I enjoy being the principal. I like that. I feel like last year was actually my first year as principal. But I feel like I failed my teachers in a lot of ways. They've been very forgiving, and I'm grateful for that. But that failure has shown me how crucial it is that a principal be intentional about helping a teacher succeed. So what does it take for a principal to help his teacher succeed? I do want to have some time at the end of our workshop here for you to share some ideas or ask questions. So keep that in mind. First of all, a successful principal must know Jesus. Must have a dynamic personal relationship with the shepherd. John 10:14-15, I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. Even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. If you try to be a principal on your own strength, you will burn out. I promise. It's hard enough that we can't do it on our own. We have to have that relationship with the Father and with Jesus, the master teacher. And letter B goes along with that. We must be a man of prayer. I just included the verses there from Mark. In the early morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went away to a secluded place and was praying there. Simon and his companions searched for him. They found him and said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." He said to them, "Let us go somewhere else to the towns nearby so that I may preach there also, for that is what I came for." Jesus knew that his purpose, part of his purpose at least, was to preach. That's what I came here for, to preach. But before he preached, he went and prayed. There have been many, many times as a teacher and as administrator, principal, and my title's administrator, when I did not know what to do. I had no idea. The problem that I had with a student, or maybe another teacher was having a problem with a student, or two students having trouble, all kinds of questions and problems, and I don't know what to do. And so I pray. And I ask God to help me, and He does, in different ways. And so we have to utterly rely on Jesus. John 15:4-5, abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you're the branches. He who abides in me and I in him, he bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Don't even try it. included a quote there from Gerald at the administrators retreat and conference. He said, our job is not to fix things. Our job is to bring people and problems to the shepherd. But we can't do that unless we know the shepherd, unless we know Jesus. So we have to know Jesus, have that personal relationship with him. But we also have to live the truth. And we've been hearing about that in some of our main sessions. We have to live in a way that fleshes out that relationship. You have to be a man of solid convictions. Paul said in Galatians 1:10, for am I now seeking the favor of man or of God? Or am I striving to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. He knew. He knew what he believed. And he was living to please God. And he lived that way. And he said, if I wasn't, I wouldn't be a bondservant of Christ. We have to have solid convictions. And we have to live those convictions. 1 John 2, 3-6. By this we know that we have come to know him, if we keep his commandments. The one who says, I have come to know him, and does not keep his commandments, is a liar. And the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him the love of God has truly been perfected. By this we know that we are in him. How do you know you're in him? Right, here's how. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. Wow. You got to walk the way Jesus walked. If you're going to say, I'm in Christ, you have to walk the way he walked. And as we do that, and again, Glendon was talking about this morning, we will be a role model or a mentor. Whether you try it or not, whether it's intentional or not, whether you think about it or not, you are. And not just to the students, but to the rest of the staff. The other teachers, they look to you. Again, Paul in 2 Timothy 3, now you followed my teaching, conduct, purpose, faith, patience, love, perseverance, persecutions, and sufferings. Continue in the things you have learned and become convinced of, knowing from whom you have learned them. That's a long list of stuff. That Paul says, you know, you've been with me, you've watched me, you learned from me, now you continue it. Knowing from whom you've learned them, and I don't think Paul was saying, I've got it all together, follow me, I know how to do this, I'm the expert here. Because other places he said, follow me as I follow Christ. And so I think when Paul said, knowing from whom you've learned them, he was saying, it's not really me, it's Jesus. And so, we have to know Jesus, we have to live the truth. And thirdly, a successful principal, or one who's going to be able to help his teacher succeed, must be a servant. And this is what I really want to talk the most about. We have to be a servant. A lion woke up one morning feeling really rowdy and mean. He went out and cornered a small monkey and roared, who's mightiest of all jungle animals? The trembling monkey answered, you are, mighty lion. Later, the lion confronted an ox and fiercely bellowed, who's the mightiest of all jungle animals? The terrified ox stammered, oh, great lion, you are the mightiest animal in the jungle. On a roll now, the lion swaggered up to an elephant and roared, who is mightiest of all jungle animals? Fast as lightning, an elephant snatched up the lion with his trunk and slammed him against a tree half a dozen times, leaving the lion feeling as if it had been run over by a safari wagon. The elephant then stomped on the lion until it looked like a corn tortilla and ambled away. The lion let out a moan of pain, lifted his head weakly, and hollered after the elephant, just because you don't know the answer, you don't have to get so upset about it. A That lion did not understand. And that's not how we're supposed to be. We are called to be servants. A few verses, Matthew 20. But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them." They make sure everybody knows I'm the mightiest in the jungle. "It is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Again, John 15:13, "Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends." And that's our job. To be servant. Servant to the teachers, to the students, to the parents and the board. And we're focusing primarily here on teachers. But we dare not forget that. We dare not forget that we're called to be servants, or else the power of the position will go to our head and it'll ruin us. Don't forget you're called to be a servant. Servant to the rest of the staff. Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others." Regard one another as more important. You're called to be a servant. You're called to lead, but you lead by being a servant. How do we do that? How do we serve? First, we have to communicate. How do we communicate? Well, written communication, staff memos, and I put those out at least weekly. Sometimes more often. We usually had weekly staff meetings as well where we would talk. I would talk, but the teachers would also talk. I'd listen to them. They could ask questions and raise concerns and sometimes vent their frustrations. Too many meetings get tiresome. Teachers will get tired of that. But they are less likely to get tired of written communication. In fact, I had one of my teachers tell me at the end of last year that she wished I would have done more staff memos. Let them know more. What's going on? What's supposed to happen? Talk to them more about what happened at board meeting. Talk to them about who's coming today and why they're coming, what they're doing. She said, "Sometimes I see these people walking around the halls, maintenance, you know, guys here to work on the furnace. She wonders what in the world he's doing here, if he's supposed to be in here walking around." Be nice to know that. Take time to listen to them. Part of communication is listening. Again, Glendon talked about that this morning. With students, listening to students. But as principals, we're called to listen to our teachers too. Listen to them. Teaching's hard work. You know that. You taught. You teach. It's hard work. And teachers need a place to talk, somebody to listen. Sometimes they just need a place to vent, like I talked about, somebody to listen to them. And that's really all they need. Other times they want advice. What should I do? How would you handle the situation? How do I relate to this student? Listen. So communicate with them. Sometimes this happens in informal ways, too. We have 11 staff members. That includes myself and a full-time secretary. And not all those are full-time, but most of them are. But we have 4 ladies that teach in elementary. And almost every day after school, they sit in the hallway down the elementary wing. They sit in the hallway and they talk. Sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes 20 minutes. And sometimes, not as often as I probably should, but sometimes I'll go down there and join them. Just talk with them. Listen to them. Sometimes it's out in the front porch. You know, students leave and sometimes teachers go out too, and we'll stand there and talk just a little bit. It's usually not very long, but a little bit. And it's those kinds of things that help to build the rapport with teachers. It gives them a place, and they know they can talk. So communicate. Evaluate their classroom and their teaching. They actually like that. It's a little bit scary. I know when I first came here for I went through the teacher apprenticeship program, and it was intimidating to think that, I mean, people sitting in the back of the room listening to me, critiquing me, writing stuff down about what I did right or wrong. But I learned to love that because it was very valuable, their input. And I knew that they weren't just being critical of me. They weren't just trying to pick me apart and point out all my bad faults. They wanted me to grow and to learn to do better. And so teachers probably value that more than what we realize. And again, I had a teacher tell me that after the end of the last year, that she wished I would have done more of that, sitting in her rooms and evaluating. When you evaluate, and whether that's a formal evaluation or if you're just talking, if there's something you see that they probably should improve or change, talk to them about it, but, and be entirely honest with them. Don't try beating around the bush. For one thing, you don't have time for that, neither do they. And I think I included in your handout there. Yeah, don't try the sandwich method either. You praise them, and then you tell them the problem, and then you praise them again. They're not stupid. They're going to know the real reason you came to talk to them was the problem. And if you have that rapport with him, like Glendon was talking about this morning, he was talking with students, but if you have that rapport with your teachers, where they know that you care about them, and that you really want what's best for them, you want them to grow, to learn to do better. And that's why you're coming with this problem, whatever it is. They're going to like that. So when there's room for improvement, tell them that. But then also praise them and encourage them. I don't know if you've ever gotten a note on your desk from another teacher, but I have a few times. That means an awful lot. When I hear another teacher tells me, you did really well in chapel this morning, or you did really well in that class you were teaching, or I saw you talking to this student, keep talking to him. It's not much, not very often I've gotten them, but I love it. We like to be encouraged. So encourage your teachers. Praise them for specific things that they're doing well. Ask them questions. That's a way of encouraging too, especially if there's been a problem. You know that you've had a problem with a student, so you maybe talk about what to do about it. And a few days later, you check in, you say, how's he doing? That means a lot to the teacher. That's very encouraging to know that you care. You're interested. You haven't forgotten. And ask them specific questions. Maybe you stop in, pop in their room for 3 minutes after school and you say, how was your day? Oh, good. That's nice. And you walk on. Well, you didn't do anything. If they say good, say, really? Because I've had teachers tell me, oh, that's pretty good. And I've said, really? And then sometimes they say, well, not really. And they'll talk. We're pretty good at giving those, you know, generic answers. How you doing this morning? Oh, good. And we keep on walking, and we didn't really care how you were doing anyhow. It's just, you know, it's a polite thing to do. But make sure your teachers know that you really do care, and ask them specific questions. If you hear a good report about them from someone else, pass that on to them. I've heard students talk about other teachers sometimes. And something that they liked about it. Tell the teacher. As principal now, I talk with parents more, and sometimes they will say something nice about a teacher. And so I pass that on to the teacher. That means a lot to a teacher. So pass on good reports and comments that you hear about them. Above all, make sure your teachers know you support them. And you'll always stand behind them. Even if they're kind of a lousy teacher in some ways, Now, of course, there comes a point where you have to let a lousy teacher go if they don't get any better. But let them know you believe in them and that they can do this, especially new teachers, because teaching is hard work. The first year is really rough a lot of times. And many, many new teachers wonder, why did I do this? Can I even handle this? Was I really cut out to be a teacher? And if you can let them know that, yes, I think you are, you can do this, hang in there. Sometimes there'll be big events, a major discipline issue or a new student that comes. We had one classroom that got 3 new students partway through the year, not all at the same time, but one and another and then another. That kind of disrupts a classroom. Especially, it was a small classroom. There were originally only 7 people in the classroom. And so, you know, really shook things up, kind of. And so, yeah, it was a major event. Maybe there was a death or an illness of someone that's close to them. Check in on them after stuff like that. Last year in Maranatha, one of our teachers lost his wife to cancer. She actually had taught at our school for over 5 years and was an excellent teacher. Students loved her. She had that rapport with students that Glennon was talking about this morning. And so, you know, students loved her. We all liked her there at Maranatha. And it was in February of 2009 and she was diagnosed with cancer. That was devastating for our school. Of course, devastating for the teacher and his children that were in school too. And then she died last November. That was hard. That was hard for our school. That was hard for our students. It was hard for the teacher. And we needed to talk about that a lot. Mr. Bigger and I needed to talk a lot. But the students needed to talk about it too. There were many days after school when I'd go talk to Mr. Bigger, ask him how he's doing. And he grieved very deeply for a while and actually went into a bit of a depression. I needed to check in on him quite a bit over that time. So check in on him after big events. Just to let him know that you haven't forgotten. Use your own experiences as a teacher and as a parent, if you are a parent, to help teachers discover new ways to handle problems they encounter. One of our teachers, the administrator before me was married, but they didn't have any children at the time. And then when I became the administrator, partway through that year, one of the teachers commented to me, "It's nice to have an administrator that's been a parent for a while. Because I can tell you understand children and you know how to help them." Okay, so use your experiences. Even if you're not a parent, use your experiences to help them. Remind them that parents often are encountering the same kinds of problems, probably the exact same problem at home that we see at school. And encourage them to ask parents for ideas, how to help. When I talk to a parent about a problem that I'm having with their child, I tell them what's going on. And again, you have to be honest. Tell them what's going on. And then before I give any kind of solution, I'll ask them, "So what do you think? What should I do? What would help him or her?" Sometimes they have ideas. Other times they go, "I don't know. What do you think?" But encourage your teachers to ask the parents for ideas, to work with the parents, to partner with them. And just a note in here, remind your teachers not to believe more about the parents than what they want the parents to believe about them. Children can come up with some wild stuff sometimes. Some of the things that our teachers at our school, our children's teachers have told us, that our children have said, "Where did they come up with that?" And sometimes you can piece it together. Oh, yeah, we said this, and they twisted it and assumed this. Went and told the teacher something wild. Or you might hear stuff about the parents. My parents always, or my mom and dad said. My workshop yesterday, I talked about how one of my students went home and said that Mr. Crouch is teaching that not all the Bible is true. You raise your eyebrows, and if that was your child saying that, you better raise your eyebrows. Whoa, that's pretty serious. Well, we talked about it, and that wasn't really what was going on. I was teaching about exaggeration in the Bible and how that, you can't take everything literally in the Bible. Our God is a rock. Well, let's go find which one. Well, that's absurd. But things got a little twisted there. So, you know, remind your teachers. Be careful what you believe about parents. Never allow a student to observe you speaking or acting disrespectfully of another teacher. That can be very difficult at times. There's a man who used to teach at our school who did not have good rapport with the students. The students did not like him. And occasionally they'll still talk about him, not in kind ways. Some of what they say is true, or probably a lot of what they say is true. I remember some years ago, I don't know how long ago it was, but some students came to me and were talking about another teacher. And some of the stuff that she had said or done, and inwardly I was cringing because I knew it was true, at least mostly. And I know some people would say you shouldn't even listen to that. A student comes to you complaining about another teacher, don't even listen to it. Well, I reason that they're going to talk about it anyway. The students are going to talk about it. So I want them to talk to me about it so that I can help them to think about what's a Christian response here. Even if what they're saying is true, this teacher did some awful things, whatever, how should you respond? And so I listened to him and let him go off, and then I talked to them about their attitude. I said, maybe what you're saying is true. I didn't tell them I thought it was, because I wasn't even sure how much of it was true, but I thought some of it probably was. But I just said, even if what you say is true, how are you going to respond? You still need to respect that teacher. And they listened. We don't have to deny that what they're saying is true. We don't need to say everything's okay, because they know. That only builds more disrespect. Now they don't not only disrespect the other teacher, they don't respect you either. But guide them. So, and you can help your teachers with this too. I've had teachers come to me already and talk about other teachers and things they didn't like. That gets sticky too. But we need to help build good attitudes and build respect. Guiding students in that is a way to help our teachers succeed. If we can help our students to respect other teachers. I have problems. I have faults. And I don't doubt that there have been times when students have gone and talked to other teachers about me, especially in my first couple of years of teaching. Sometimes I wonder what the board was thinking when they kept hiring me back. But I guess they saw more potential in me than I saw in myself. I don't know. But I don't doubt that students went and talked to other teachers. I don't doubt that at all. But if we can help them to respect that teacher, it'll help them to succeed. Act as a buffer to shield teachers from distractions. Their job is to teach, but teaching is a lot more than just teaching. And as a principal, like I said, it includes a wide variety of stuff. But do as much as you can, and those of you who have to teach full time, this is a lot more difficult. But do as much as you can to take care of the distractions. Plunge the toilets. Change light bulbs. Adjust desks. Fix the sweeper when it gets clogged up for the third time that week. because somebody was trying to sweep up a paper wad or a paper clip stuck in the hose. Clean up the broken window. Even if the teacher broke the window. I actually had a teacher break a window this past year. She didn't try it. It was an accident, but the window was broken. In fact, it was kind of a strange situation, but it was one of those swing-out windows, and this window was out, and there was a door right there, and she opened the door, and all somehow the window came down on top of the door, and she was kind of stuck there. It was after recess, because she couldn't let the door go, because then the window would fall and shatter glass all over the place. And fortunately, I came by, and she said, need help. Okay? Take care of that kind of stuff. Give that cup of cold water to your teachers. Or to the students, if that helps your teachers succeed. We're called to be servants, to serve our teachers. Max Dupree says, leaders exist to absorb pain, not inflict it. And so part of our job is to shield them, maybe a parent who's upset. Now, usually when a parent will call me, I don't know if I have this in your hand, in here, but when a parent calls me with a complaint about a teacher, I ask them, most of the time I ask them, did you talk to the teacher about it? Well, no. Okay, then I won't listen to them until they've talked to the teacher, because 95% of the time they talk to the teacher and it clears things up. You know, it's a misunderstanding or something like that. But sometimes parents complain about teachers, and I know that it's really kind of ridiculous. You know, what they're complaining about really isn't even a valid complaint. And so I don't bother going to the teacher saying, so-and-so was saying this about you. They don't even know that. Leaders exist to absorb pain, not inflict it. Give your teachers resources that they need to grow. And again, you might be limited in how much you can do this, but as much as you can. Make sure they have time to relax, to have a life outside of school. Glendon was talking about how he likes to hunt. Maybe you know your teacher likes to hunt. So part of our job as principals is in helping our teachers to succeed is to make sure that they're not burning themselves out of school. It's easy for us to do that. Maybe you can ask your board if they could somehow give teachers, help teachers afford to take time off to come get some extra training, to come to Teachers Week, or come out here for summer term, or maybe take a college course or something like that. Our school board does that. They pay half the tuition for something like this, or for any kind of college courses that teachers want to take. They also pay to send all of us staff to an annual teacher's retreat. What are we doing? We can grow and learn. And new teachers, give them a mentor teacher. You can't always, this past year we had 3 new teachers at our school. And I didn't do very well with that because I didn't do this mentor teacher thing. I should have. I couldn't keep up with all 3 of them and answer all their, you know, I couldn't do it. It's too much. So give them somebody that they can if you can't do it. And maybe you're the principal by default or something like that, but there's somebody else who's taught a lot longer. Let them mentor these new teachers. Make sure your teachers know and understand board decisions. And help them support board decisions that they don't appreciate. Because that happens sometimes. That's part of my responsibility as principal, to attend board meetings, and then I need to communicate to the staff the decisions that the board makes. And I need to be clear in that. I make sure they know and understand. And I have to support the decisions the board makes. Even if I personally disagree with it, that has happened more than once. They've decided something that I didn't really like. But I have to support it anyway. And we need to help our teachers to do that. Because if the teacher doesn't respect the board, they aren't going to succeed. Uh, Help your teachers recognize and understand how they can show Jesus to their students. Model, how they can model being a Christian. What does it mean? Encourage them to take an interest in all students, big and small. And not just from their own classroom. That takes a lot of thought, a lot of energy. But it goes a long way in helping them to earn respect. And I find that particularly with my, in our school, we have separate elementary and high school. I mean, it's the same building, but they really don't interact much, very, very little. And I try to encourage my high school teachers to interact with the elementary students as much as they can, because in a few years, you know, they're going to be in high school. And if you can build a relationship with them when they're little, well, it's much easier because they're much more open. Trust them. It'll help. Take an interest. A delight in the children. Enjoy them. Play with them at recess. Put band-aids on them. I'm talking about you now, as the principal. And again, if you teach full-time, this is much more difficult. But if you have a chance, you see somebody get hurt, put a band-aid on them. That helps the teachers. Help students when they spill the trash can accidentally. I remember one time I have a hole punched in my office and I had just emptied it into the trash can. You know it's coming. Students come around and get the trash and they somehow spill all those little paper punches on the floor. Well, I got down and I helped them pick up those pieces of paper and put them in the trash bag again. Be a servant. Eat lunch with your students. Help them pick up their books when they drop them. They're walking down the hall and not spill their books. 7th and 8th graders do that a lot sometimes. Seems like. Help them pick up the books. Again, these little things go a long way in building relationships and delighting in them. And it's possible to do all these things, to play with them at recess and eat lunch with them, but you aren't really delighting them. You aren't really thrilled to be with them. And you can't just, again, work that up on your own. This can only come as you know Jesus. And as you pray and ask Him to help me to really love these children and to delight in them. And when they come with their long stories that Glennon was talking about, to listen and hear. We have to do these things ourselves too, because that'll help make fewer problems for the teacher when they respect us. Now they need to fear us in some ways. But if it's all fear and there's no relationship, roles without relationship lead to rebellion. Stop by their classrooms sometimes. And I'm not talking here about evaluating, just stop in for 5 or 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be very long. But teachers love it when I do that. I just pop in their door a little bit, see what's going on, look around, and leave again. And students do too. They don't always act like it, but I think they do. I think they like when the principal comes around. Talk to students. Ask them about their lives. And again, younger children do this more naturally. You don't have to ask them. But even older students, talk to them, ask them. If you can find out what they like, ask them questions about it. And if you know they did something that they, you know, maybe they like to hunt, you know they went hunting on the weekend, ask them about it. Or if you hear they shot a big buck, they'd love to talk about that. Know when and how to make use of humor. Again, Glenda talked a little bit about that as a teacher, but we have to know how to make use of humor. As a teacher, I often start my classes with a little joke, sort of like the one I read about the lion. You know, something humorous. And it might not even relate anything to what I'm teaching. Most of the time it doesn't. But it's just, you know, breaks up the day a little bit. Do that with your teachers, too. Use some humor. And that's an art. How can teachers show Jesus to their students? By taking an interest in them, but also by spending time with Jesus. master teacher. Again, we talked about this earlier, but encourage your teachers to take time. There have been times in my teaching career when I didn't have time. I said, I didn't have time to pray or to read my Bible regularly because I was busy doing good stuff. Don't let your teachers do that. Show them by example the importance of spending time. And I don't know if you have devotions at your school with your teachers at all or not, or perhaps you do it with, you know, you have a chapel with your students or something like that once a week, whatever. If you do, talk about what you've been reading in your personal quiet time. Show by example that the importance of doing that and how it really does apply. It does affect me. And again, remind your teachers that they are a role model to their students. How they can show Jesus to their students. Teaching's hard work. Being the principal is even harder. And if you're trying to do both, it's harder yet. There's pressures and challenges that come with this role that we probably didn't anticipate. And we feel the responsibility. And if you're like me, you have a long list of things that you really should be doing and you just don't have time to get to. And it never gets short, it seems like. And it's easy to feel overwhelmed and to just kind of burn out. And so I close with this encouragement, two verses. James 1:12, "Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial. For once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him." In Hebrews 12, "Therefore, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith." And the end of verse 3 says, "So that you will not grow weary and lose heart." Now, I'd like to hear your questions or ideas you have for how principals can help teachers succeed. Yes.
One of my teachers is sitting right here. Okay. Before the class started, one of my jobs as her principal is that she needs to be a better person at the end of this coming school year. She is.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming you're talking about more than just her teaching.
Exactly.
As a person. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Under point number one on the second page, you mentioned staff memos. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with those. What do you mean by that?
Okay. That's what we call them in our school. It's just, rather than having a meeting and having to talk to all the teachers about what we're going to do tomorrow or how things are going to work, because, you know, particularly for us as a larger school, in high school we teach by subject. And so the students are going from room to room, and if a teacher needs to leave for a little bit or something, we have to shuffle the schedule. It affects a lot of people. Or if we're doing something different, we normally have chapel Tuesday mornings. Well, maybe we're going to bump it to Wednesday morning. So it's a way just to let teachers know that kind of stuff, what's going on. In our staff devotions, we do get together as a staff every morning for devotions. Before the students get there. And we take turns with that. And so it's, you know, I let them know whose turn it is next week. We also have what we call a gym monitor during that devotional time. There are a few students that are there, and so they go to the gym and wait down there until we're finished with our staff devotions. Teacher has to be down there for that. So some of those rotating schedules I remind them of, just items that they should be aware of that might maybe change or that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? Yeah. And in a smaller school, if you only have two or three teachers, it's probably not real hard to go and talk to, you know, two people and let them know. We have 11, so it can be difficult to.
How do you want your teachers to respect focuses? How do you want them to?
That's a good question. I would say, and I'd like to hear input from you if you have it, the rest of you, but we all, the Bible calls us to submit ourselves to each other. And if you agree with something, you can't, you don't really, that's not really submitting to it. That's agreeing. And so when there's a decision made that we don't appreciate or we don't like, that's when we have to submit. And so I've had to remind teachers of that. Pray for them, because you can't, you can tell them that and they still might not change, might not respect it. But pray for them. Not necessarily in the presence, but maybe. Depends on how well you know them in the situation, but yeah. How about the rest of you? Any ideas?
See, this is a very important question. It will come. It's just so important. The worst situation you have in classrooms is an adversary relationship between teacher and student. Mm-hmm. Okay, well then you can bump it up and you have a board teacher. That's one of the worst things that can happen. I appreciate what you said about submitting. We're going to be cheerful about that, even not rushing. But this is just the way it is. We work for these people. Mm-hmm. And our bosses have told us this is the way it's going to be. So why not? Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be the same way if you worked anywhere else. And I last year in chapel, we had chapel every week with the whole you know, school, all the students. And once a month I would do the chapel. Other times I'd get ads and stuff to come in. But I focused on character traits, one for each month. And one of them was obedience. And I defined obedience as obeying right away, all the way, and with a good attitude. So if we expect our children to do that, we better too. With a good attitude. And again, that doesn't mean I'm going, hallelujah, I have to do this. But we do it, and we do it cheerfully.
We know that we become stagnant if we don't continue to develop, grow. I'd be interested in hearing some ideas about the principal's responsibility to help our teachers grow and address evaluating their teaching. Are there other ideas? I know my co-teachers and I have talked about working through some high school electives together after school, one evening a week. Maybe working through parts of the literature course, you get to discuss the lesson once a week or something. Have any of you all done that? We have. It sounds like fun, but it also requires a lot of time.
I haven't done that. Anybody here done that?
We do a teacher inspiration thing once a week where we take turns. Each teacher has to present, say, like on Monday after school, something that personally impacted and blessed their lives. Just share with us. And, you know, I can know you around the rest of your face, but I don't know if you can open your mouth and tell me what's inside you. If we open our lives to each other, it goes automatically, if we're around good people, grow. Because next year, this time, I'm going to be the very same person I am today, except for the people I meet and the books I read. So why not share the people and the books I read with other people? I think we do enough scholarly work during the day. We don't need to have an extra session at night. Let's just bless each other with things that bless us. It's powerful. It doesn't have to be very long.
Mm-hmm. I know Gerald here at Faith Builders requires all his teachers to read a book together over the summer. I mean, they read it over the summer and have to do a written book report too before school starts. I'm toying with trying out of my school, but yeah, probably go over like a lead balloon.
Bracing yourself.
Yeah. And they agree before, like at the end of the school year, what book they're going to read. They can talk about it and decide on a book together. Go ahead.
What you said about doing a written book report during the summer, I've forgotten what something that we did in our this past year during the school year. I got a teacher's book, an inspirational book that the teacher had some helps in. And we I think the book was divided into different sessions. And one of us would read one section and ask something to the teacher, and when it came around to me, I knew the second section. And we wouldn't read it together, but all on our own, the books being read by the teachers.
How should you respond when you're writing the five on page two? Speaking disrespectfully or negatively of staff members, how should you respond when teachers have problems with teachers, whether it's a good concern or not? Like, is that something that you should deal with? Is that something that you should probably or obviously?
That probably depends on your job description, and you probably didn't get a formal job description, but as administrator, that involves a little bit more than simply principal. That's part of my job. I remember the board telling me that as administrator, I'm responsible for the entire operation of the school. Doesn't mean I have to do everything, but I'm responsible to see that it gets done somehow. And so that it would involve that kind of thing. This is my opinion, but I'd say maybe with you being a little bit younger, and I know you're a single guy and you teach with single ladies, it could become a little more awkward or inappropriate. And so it might be better for that to go to a board. And I'd say if you're not sure, ask your board member. Are they willing to deal with it, or are they just kind of okay? Yeah.
I guess the one thing that I saw in our school before I went down, I heard enough people talking about it and what was going on, and I guess what was happening was the principal would take his responsibility, but then he'd always take it straight to the board also, and then the board would become involved. And I know a number of students that said, man, they can hardly do anything, and the board's on them. And I think we need to be careful. There's a chain of command. And when that chain is broken, and when we go straight to the board, instead of trying to let the teacher try to deal with it, if it needs help, the principal helps. The school board needs to be informed, but not always part of the administrative process. And I think that was one of the biggest problems they had, and it was because of that. I don't know if y'all may have experienced something like that.
Well, my board does very well at not getting involved unless I want them to. I'll often call especially a few of them, that I'll, you know, the chairman of the board, I'll call him fairly often with questions or get his opinion. But he doesn't get involved unless I ask him to. Yeah.
It was a lot of the principal was taking over and the teacher finding out that he talked to the students after he did it. Mm-hmm. And they never knew he was even going to talk to them. And they were wondering where the student was at. It may have been during break or so. And it caused a lot of problems when you break that chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Well, need to let you get to the next session. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your participation. I hope you can have a good year with your teachers.